Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment, where your questions and comments matter. At 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810.
Welcome back to The Daily Drama on WHUR and Sirius XM, Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment. I'm Harold Fisher.
You are not welcome here. You are not welcome here. You are not.
That was yesterday at Lafayette Park in the shadow of the White House during the Unite the Right rally. It's just one of the stories we're discussing tonight at the Reporters Roundtable. Also tonight, Omarosa on a tear against President Trump as she promotes her new book, Unhinged, manslaughter charges in the Stand Your Ground case in Florida. And of course, the Queen of Soul, Aretha Franklin, gravely ill tonight. My guests are political analyst Justin Duckham and Deborah Simmons with the Washington Times. Thank you all for joining us.
Thank you.
Lines are open. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Deborah, was this the white supremacist rally that wasn't? I say yes. What do you say?
This was a rally that wasn't, because everybody was zooming into D.C. because you had the protesters and or the commemorators and the counter protesters. You had the mayor with the press conference. She's got metro officials. She's got the chief of police, and everybody's assuring us everything's going to be fine. We're ready. We're ready. We're ready for the showdown. And there was no showdown.
Exactly.
There was a showdown against media.
You
because
think so?
Well, yeah, I read the stories. I read the story. When you get in the, when you call the media out of their name and assume because that they work at a certain branch of the media that they're racist and they're biased in their coverage, that's a confrontation. When you try to prohibit them from moving around, that's a confrontation. And it happened in D.C. and it happened in Charlottesville.
See, I don't get that, because I was there yesterday, mm-hmm. and I was primarily on the where the counter protesters were, but there was an area between groups of counter protesters right at H Street north of the Lafayette statue. You had a lot of network folks there. But then where the white supremacists were, you had media over there also.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did not get the impression that that we were restricted in any way. But that notwithstanding, I think that one of the big issues that came up yesterday, Justin, was mm-hmm. Metro said that we're not going to have a special reserved car for the white supremacists. And they did.
Exactly. Yeah. And we are seeing some blowback facing the Metro today. They have responded and said that this was basically a move that was put on them by the D.C. police. And in respect to them, the D.C. police are also coming out and saying that the reason why yesterday went smoothly, why there wasn't violence, was because of their efforts to keep protesters separated from the white supremacists. Now, you know, my knee-jerk reaction to somebody who lives in D.C. is to blame the Metro. It's always to blame the Metro. It's always to go after WMATA. No, I mean, I've been late for work way too many times.
Yeah. I do not want to blame Metro.
Fully understood.
But in this case, you know, it looks like they may have a justification for what they did here with their, you know, reasoning. It may be the police's interaction. I think this is something that needs to be investigated a little bit further. But, you know, as it stands right now, and this pains me to say it, the Metro may be right.
But here's the thing, because Chief Newsom did say at the press conference that they were going to keep them separate. He said it over and over and over again.
Right.
So is it, Are we dealing with an issue about optics here? Because I think it's so ironic that the white supremacists were in the rear car.
No, listen. There are two things, and that's an angle to that, because they know now. They now know how Rosa Parks felt and right. all those other folks. Okay, here's the thing: Metro runs Metro.
Right.
Chief Newsom runs the city and Metro. He's responsible for you whether you're, when it comes to public safety matters and public health matters, whether you're on the Metro platform, walking down K Street with the rest of the lobbyists or whatever. He's responsible for that. What we don't know is whether he gave the information to, and it might have happened on the ground, think about that, when people were boarding the trains. But did the officer say, we better separate, or did the police department do that beforehand? Which is a smooth move.
But here's the thing. If that is the case, then why didn't we hear about Newsom? Why didn't Newsom talk about Metro last week?
He can't do that. What is he supposed to do? Tell his hand on everything?
No, not that either. Right, but again... What I'm saying is
that's like Jeff Sessions standing up and telling folks this is where we're going to conduct our next drug raid.
Well, I mean, it is striking that we had the Metro coming out or WMATA coming out and saying repeatedly this will not happen.
WMATA was the one that was stepping right. forward and talking about this.
Right, and then it happened, which you know begs the question: did WMATA consult with the police before they made that statement? Was WMATA saying things that were inaccurate? And again, this is something that needs to be looked into.
Yeah, and I don't think it's a who knew what and when they knew it.
It was about the plan.
I want to know that Chief Newsom knew what the police department knew. I don't even need to know that Muriel Bowser was going to know, the mayor, because she wasn't even going to be here.
Yeah.
I need to know that Chief Newsom has his hand on the public safety pulse and that he's pulling the strings.
Well, let's see what our listeners have to say. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are at the Reporters Roundtable. Lots to talk about tonight, not just the white supremacist rally that wasn't yesterday. We're talking about Metro's car that had the white supremacists. We're also going to talk about Omarosa, a new Stand Your Ground case in Florida, and of course, Aretha Franklin. Walter, calling from Northeast. Thanks for calling, Walter. What's on your mind?
Good evening, Mr. Fisher.
And hey, everybody. How are you?
Let me hurry up. Number one, give God the glory, because that rain came just in time. And I pray for the Aretha Franklin and her family.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But Omarosa is going to get what she got. Look, she was smart. She's got copies of recording. So if I'm Donald Trump, I will be very careful. Remember when he fired Steve Bannon, calling him fatso?
Mm-hmm. Actually, it was Sloppy Steve, but go ahead.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the thing is, you can put, calling people's names is going to backfire on him, because Omarosa's got those copies. And guess what? It makes a difference, but Trump hired her.
Yeah.
Got what he deserved.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Walter. I appreciate it. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Let's talk about Omarosa. This is actually what she told MSNBC today.
He's different than the person I met back in 2003. He has some serious mental impairment. He would say one thing in the morning, and as a part of the comm team, we would go and try to formulate a plan, a communications plan to implement. By that afternoon, he will have tweeted something without telling us, completely contradictory of what he said in the morning.
Is this as entertaining as The Apprentice right now? Or, I mean, I just find it fascinating, the way that this situation has turned. I'll let you start, because I know Deborah's sharpening it a bit. Justin, I want you to start on this.
This should really surprise nobody. Donald Trump knew what he was getting into when he started, pulling people into the administration. There was obviously some signs that these were opportunists, that these were people who had relations with him who were pretty eager to cause controversy, and that reflects on his management style. He's somebody who clearly thrives off of chaos. He was a chaos candidate, I guess to kind of quote Jeb Bush a little bit there, and lo and behold, it's turning into the chaos presidency.
Deborah.
You know what? Omarosa, at some point, when as soon as she saw this, remember, she's a minister. She's an ordained minister, Howard alum, spent a lot of time in D.C., so she knows the fake news from the swamp, from the deep state, but she doesn't know the New Yorker, the native New Yorker, or, more importantly, the politician.
Okay.
She's been watching from the outside. What she knows is reality TV drama.
Okay.
That's what she should be doing. Working with Antoine Fuqua or somebody on a script and writing a reality TV show, or ask the Real Housewives of Potomac, can I join? Because that's what she's thrived on. She's never been the same person. How many times do you remember seeing Omarosa with Donald Trump?
When?
Hello? Mm-hmm. And well, I've done it maybe a handful of times.
Are you talking about at the White House or with the Apprentice?
I'm talking about the White. I don't watch that stuff.
Okay, well, because you need to be clear, and I need to go back to the phone to make your point.
I watch the White House. That's where my tax dollars are going.
Okay.
I've seen her, I've noticed her a half dozen times. And she's sitting there. She's not saying anything. She's not interacting with anybody. And she blew, I think, her own book by telling us what he had done and what he was said right after she was fired from the White House.
Let me go
deal
back.
Deal with it.
We've got a lot to talk about. Let me go back to the phones real quick. Let me talk to Sanshay, I believe that is. Is that Sanshay? Quickly, from Lanham. What's on your mind? Sanshay, are you there? Give me a call back. Let's go to Calvin, calling from Southeast. What's on your mind?
Hey, people love to hate, and some people hate to love. You can't stop a person from hating. No different than you stop a person from loving. Romeo and Juliet, they love and their parents didn't want them. Why confront folks if they hate? Just leave them alone.
What are you talking about, Calvin?
I'm talking about the march.
Okay, go ahead.
Confrontation wasn't necessary. The situation was, when was the last white supremacist or KKK person? When did they lynch a black person, okay? We got more people discriminating that live in our neighborhood next door to us. That's hurting black folks. But those KKK and white supremacists, I give them one thing, they have come out the closet.
Okay. Well, before I go to a break, I'll let you. You perked up when he said, "When was the last time they lynched a black person?" Your thoughts about that, Deborah?
We don't know that they've stopped lynching.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't know that. We do know about the black genocide that's going on, and we've talked about that on this show as well. Listen, you can't legislate behavior. You can legislate and create laws that say you can't do this, you can't do that. If you do this, this is what's going to happen to you. This is how long a sentence you'll get. We know that between the crack and the cocaine sentencings that was going on. But you can't legislate hate. And if the KKK are out of the closet, it's because they're not enrobed anymore. But hate is hate is hate. That doesn't mean you should not confront.
I want to finish this point after the break. And we're also going to talk to, I believe it's Elle calling from Fairmont Heights. Sanshay called back from Lanham, so please don't hang up. Deborah also on the line from Landover, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are at the Reporters Roundtable. Lots to talk about tonight. Don't hang up. You will be able to hear the program. Keep trying. If you can't get through, I promise I will take your phone call. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on 96.3 WHUR. More of this conversation on Sirius XM, Channel 141 in just a few seconds.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're at the Reporters Roundtable with political analyst Justin Duckham and Deborah Simmons with The Washington Times. If you have a question, if you have a comment, give us a call. We're talking about the Unite the Right rally yesterday. We're talking about Omarosa and her media blitz and attack against President Trump. We're also going to touch on this new Stand Your Ground case coming out of Florida today. The man who originally was not arrested has now been charged with manslaughter in the shooting death of a black man. And, of course, we're going to talk about Aretha Franklin family confirming tonight that she is gravely ill. Let's finish that point, Deborah. And to that point, should we ignore the white supremacists that say they're going to march on Washington or Charlottesville or anywhere?
We should not ignore anybody who's a supremacist.
Okay.
I don't care whether they're white. I don't care whether they're black. Saying you are a supremacist means that you think yourself as better than someone else.
But in this specific case, though, I mean, there's some have said on this program, we had listeners who said we shouldn't go. We should turn our backs on them. We shouldn't pay attention to them. We shouldn't give them the publicity.
Well, isn't that the opposite of confrontation, to ignore them?
I'm asking.
That gets us nowhere. What we have to do is find common ground. And if there is no common ground, then say bless you and walk away.
Justin. Also, you know, a white supremacist killed somebody last year. Last year, it was a major flashpoint for a lot of people in the U.S. This was a big deal. And there was the very realistic possibility that this was going to happen again. So, I think the attention was warranted. I'm absolutely stoked that only about 24 people showed up. I think that says a lot about D.C. and a lot about our country. I think it also says a lot about them, with the fact that these are people who talk tough but ended up only showing up in incredibly small numbers due to some rain and, counter-protests. I think that kind of flies in the face of what
it's
they're
called divine intervention.
I think they were afraid. I mean, and this is not saying anything about Charlottesville, but we're talking that's Charlottesville. Mm-hmm. This is Washington D.C. And I will tell you, when I was out there and I suspected that this was going to happen, that you did have organized.
Now, what was going to happen?
I'm going to say. Oh, okay. I'm going to tell you that you had organized groups, left and far right and far left groups and the like, but then the entire afternoon, I heard some young black men who obviously were not connected to any organization in their colorful metaphoric expressions basically saying, I just can't wait for something to pop off because I'm here to make sure.
And I'm ready.
And I'm ready. And I think that the Richard Spencers of the white supremacy world, they knew that. And I think that they told their supporters not to go. So I really think that the white supremacists.
Well, wait a minute. That implies the media, we missed the story. If they told them not to go,
there was a lot of discussion about that last week. Quite a bit.
So there was no need for all of that.
Oh, I can't say that there was.
Yeah, I'm not saying there was no need.
I'm telling you what he said.
Here's the thing, Harold. So. People have always come to this city to protest.
That's true.
Because we're the nation's capital.
That's true.
Okay, we're not on the sideline like some other cities.
But this isn't 1925
either. But this is 2018.
Exactly.
And we're still commemorating, memorializing what happened to that young woman down in Charlottesville last year. Okay? Here's the thing. I would be just as afraid as a brother, whether he's armed or not, because that was a point Chief Newsham made. Remember, you can't have no guns around here.
I understand that.
Yeah. So I wouldn't care whether it was a brother holding that gun or a white guy. If you think you want to take human life, how do you
I'm not talking about human life. I'm talking about the fact that you had 24 guys roll up here, and you probably had about 2,000 people who don't
some people
like
say 4,000.
At least 2,000. Yeah. No, they were afraid. And it's one thing to go to a Charlottesville.
Well, they might have been scared. You're outnumbered. Just simply outnumbered could
that
create
is my point.
Fear.
That's my
I've
point.
I walked down the street and seen six or eight people coming toward me, and I have fear. Don't misunderstand that.
But you're not announcing that you're going to rally against those six folks walking down. Let me go to the phone. Let me go.
There was
to
no
the
win.
Phone.
There was no win yesterday. The win. The only victory we had yesterday was that it was peaceful. That was the victory.
That's a good victory. I'm happy with that.
I'll take that. Yeah, I am too.
Yeah.
Both because Unite the Right wasn't here, and because the counter protesters.
Yeah, it was peaceful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sanshay, calling from Lanham, you call back. What's on your mind?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. Go ahead.
Man, it's good. It's good. This is my first time being on the radio show on the phone. So here's my thing. You know, about the Stand Your Ground law?
Yeah, the Florida case. Right. Yeah.
And I was down there at the time where they were talking about when Trayvon Martin got murdered by George Zimmerman.
Mm-hmm.
And I lived in Sanford around 2012, December 2012, and I was very disturbed that, to know that they let the guy free, basically. And not just because his father used to be affiliated with the justice system, the courts.
Right.
The fact of the matter is, the Stand Your Ground law was not made. I feel as though it's not made for black people. I'm going to be honest with you because that situation, I'm sure you're aware of the situation where, Marquise McLaughlin and,
That's what we're talking about. One of the issues that we're talking about, but quickly, I got a lot of folks on the phone. What's your point, Sanjay?
My point is that they need to reform that law. They need to get rid of it because all it's doing is, all it's doing is making it where it's sanctioned. White people can be like, "I'm in fear of my life," and kill black people.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, and let's update our listeners on specifically what has happened. Michael Draker, who was seen on a security camera at a convenience store shooting Marquise McLaughlin. This was over a handicapped parking space. And originally the sheriff in Pinellas County said that he could not arrest Draker because of the Stand Your Ground law. However, today Draker has been charged with manslaughter in that case. And is this a turnaround? I mean, bail has been set at $100,000 for Michael Draker. Your thoughts about where we are right now, Justin?
Well, just in regards to what your caller was saying, on paper, Stand Your Ground almost makes sense. It's this notion that, if you feel that you are about to receive grievous bodily harm or you believe that death is imminent, you are not obligated to run away and can therefore use deadly force if it's in a reasonable situation. That, however, doesn't really translate to real life as we've seen in this situation. And it's time and time again empowered people to take the law in their own hands or treat being shoved as the same as having imminent death. And that creates a situation where you have bad actors either encouraged to act recklessly or being put in a situation where they think they are on the legal right where that just doesn't exist. And that is a terrifying prospect.
Deborah.
Here's the thing. There's something wrong if we change a law that most of America didn't even know about until a man named George Zimmerman ignored what he was being told on a 911 phone call because the young black guy in the hood was walking exactly where he was supposed to be. And that's walking toward his daddy's house. He was doing nothing wrong until that C word comes in again. That C word is confrontation.
Mm-hmm.
You have to, and this is what a lot of us has been trying to explain to young people. You have to buttress yourself with that. We had a prominent D.C. attorney on here who said, don't try to reckon with the police while you're in the car and they done told you to get out and pull over and pull out your ID. Do you remember that?
I can't say because there's so many.
His name will come to me.
But your point.
But the point is that if you're armed and the person who's armed thinks their life is in danger, why the hell do you think they're walking around with the gun? Because they're going to use it.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you have a gun and you are a private citizen and you have a concealed carry permit, I would imagine that you would feel considerably bigger and badder.
Exactly. Yul Brynner versus Steve McQueen.
Right. if you were not armed, I will say, as we saw in this video, there was a comedy of errors here, because Draka decided that he was going to do what we've seen so many times. You know, a lot of white folks, they get empowered. Excuse me, Justin. And they start deciding that they are going to enforce rules, regulations, and laws on the street. Mm-hmm. So him confronting the girlfriend was the biggest issue.
And child.
Right, and the child.
Oh,
exactly.
The child, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then the boyfriend comes out, and as chivalrous as it appeared to be, he put his hands on the man. That was also problematic, okay? I think, again, considered confrontational. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. But who knows, even if he hadn't touched the man, we still don't know what might have happened.
What might have happened.
Yeah, so
look at what it was over.
A handicapped parking space, yeah, and we've seen that before. We saw that recently with an NBA player and the police, where he, in the middle of the night, he parked across a handicapped spot, and the police confronted him and arrested him.
Well, we also saw this with Draka too. He has a history of being confrontational.
Yeah.
He's pulled a gun on a trucker over something similar.
But we know that after the fact. That's after the fact. You don't know. You never know. Because everybody doesn't, that's not what we wear on our sleeves anymore. We don't wear, and this thing about let's love one another, kumbaya, that ain't going to happen.
Yeah. Let me go back to the phones, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're at the Reporters Roundtable. Lots to talk about tonight. Omarosa, the rally in D.C., the white supremacist rally, Stand Your Ground in Florida, and of course, Aretha Franklin, gravely ill tonight. Let me go to L calling from Fairmont Heights. What's on your mind?
How you doing?
I'm doing. Go ahead. Got a lot of folks on the line. You got 30 seconds. Go ahead.
Yeah. Okay, first, let me say rest in peace to Trayvon Martin. I heard y'all was talking with him. As far as the rally, I think, you know, we all know that it's pretty stupid. But, you know, with the Muslims and everything...
The Muslims?
Nobody goes down there and bother them when they have their rallies, right? So I don't think we should go down there and bother them. We already know they're stupid.
Who's stupid? So, who is stupid?
KKK.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so I don't think we should go down there and protest against them while they're doing their stupid stuff, because that's why that lady got killed in Virginia. Okay.
She was.
So you're a counter protester, you're saying?
Omarosa?
Yeah.
You know, Donald Trump, I think he needed somebody black, just, you know, in his party. That's the only reason Omarosa was there.
Okay. Al, thank you so much. I appreciate it. Patterson calling from D.C. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I'm a lifelong Washingtonian. I grew up in Detroit Park, not Detroit Park, like y'all like to say. But anyway, the bottom line is this. I'm not a fan of Omarosa's, but I worked in government. I had a top secret clearance in the military. The thing is that I think she did the right thing.
Okay.
You know why? CYA, you know what that stands for.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she said that. Yeah. She said that if she hadn't had the recordings, nobody would believe
her. How do you take a woman in a room and lock the door and leave her husband sitting out in a chair on the other side and then try to intimidate her?
Now, I don't know about the husband part, but he doesn't work for the White House, so.
You remember Martha Stewart. You old enough to remember Martha Stewart. Her husband couldn't control her. You see what happened?
Okay. Patterson, thank you so much. I think this is a good place to take a break. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Deborah, calling from Landover, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're at the Reporters Roundtable. We'll be back in just a moment.
Is yet to come.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. We're back at the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Let's go to Deborah. Deborah, calling from Landover. Deborah, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hello. I'm calling in reference to the situation with Omarosa.
Okay.
I mainly called to inquire if, in fact, Omarosa broke any laws by taking a recording device into the Situation Room. Yes, I understand about CYA covering yourself and whatnot. However, if so, what might happen to her as a result of recording the conversation?
That's such a good question. Anybody have any idea?
The thing is she reportedly broke no law recording the conversation she had with President Trump that we've heard bits of, right, the past day or so. She reportedly broke no law recording in the Situation Room. The issue was she broke protocol on more than one occasion.
But there's also the non-disclosure agreement
that she signed. Nobody signed on her behalf, or we haven't found that part out yet because we, the media, haven't seen the document yet. But she reportedly signed the non-disclosure agreement. And she broke protocol, which was the quote unquote cause for her firing.
Exactly. And, you know, the NDA, that is a big legal hurdle right now that is not usually put on government employees due to the First Amendment and due to some serious issues that comes with transparency. But she apparently signed one during the campaign that basically extended indefinitely, saying that you are never allowed to disparage Trump publicly even after you leave office, and that is where she could get into issues. In terms of the recording itself, D.C. is where this took place. We have a rule where as long as one member of the conversation is privy to it being recorded, then you are pretty much good to go. The big questions mainly surrounding this is, why exactly is the White House hiring people who would do this, and why is there a need to basically walk around the White House with a body cam, pulling in this information? And she has receipts. Some of the conversations that have come out have been pretty troubling. We don't know what she still has, and that could really raise some big issues down the road.
There you go. Deborah, thank you so much for calling. Let's talk to, do we have Tony? There we go. Tony, calling from Capitol Heights. What's on your mind?
Calling about Omarosa.
Go right ahead.
I'm not one of a fan of Omarosa, but I do commend her for protecting herself, because if she had not had those tapes, people would have believed all the things that Trump and his administration was actually saying about her. Mm-hmm. I think she was wise to record those to protect herself, knowing that, you know, she's in there with wolves. And when you in there with that type of environment, they learn how to play the game very quickly. And I think she was smart. To cover herself in that way, because especially we look at Trump and all the dirt that Trump has done and the things that his administration has done, and when it comes to a person of color, especially a woman, people are quick to jump on her for what she has done, but yet fail to realize all this from the Trump administration's coming in with the Russians and all those other things that he has initiated. We fail to look at that.
Okay.
And other people's mistakes as well, but she's learned from the best.
Okay. Tony, thank you so much. I appreciate it. On this Omarosa thing, let's talk a little bit about the whole credibility piece. Certainly, okay, we've heard some of the recordings. She says she has others. I'm not even concerned so much about what we hear as to whether or not we should believe it, whether it's credible. We hear it as long as we understand the context. But I think the thing that is troubling is who is the messenger? Because for the past 2 days, 36 hours, all she has been talking about is black, black, black. I'm black, and here's my black card, and I'm protecting the black community. But we did not see that after Charlottesville. We didn't hear that with birtherism. And I can go on and on and on and on, and she defended the president. And some would argue, well, that's what people do when you are working in the political arena, and now that you're out, now you can come out and tell the truth. But is she
or her version
or
of
her
the
or her version yeah. of the thank you thank yeah. you but is she a credible messenger for black folks? That's my question.
Listen, she came out and said the Mr. Trump used the N-word.
Right.
Okay, that didn't faze me at all. People use the word all day, every day.
Yeah, but hold on. But this is the president of the
United States. I don't care. He's a man who put his pants on every day, just like you and Justin. So I'm not going to buy that. The thing that one thing Tony said really struck me. You okay. know what he said?
What's that?
She went in there with wolves.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Now, if I'm to accept her credibility at all, she knew she was going into a den of wolves. And either she told herself to record, or she had a Linda Tripp with her in her circle.
Linda Tripp, Monica Lewinsky
yeah. who dropped that seed.
No pun intended.
No pun. No.
Yeah. Go ahead.
No pun intended.
Go ahead, Justin.
No, but I mean, okay. When it comes to credibility, should she be taken credibly? Only to the extent that she has receipts. But the big question is, should we be taking the White House's denials credibly at this point?
How about that?
And they've lied about her before. When she first was fired, they said that she resigned. Sarah Sanders said the day after that Omarosa was going to be coming in, suggesting that she was going to be in the administration until January of 2018. We now know that wasn't the case, but that was a public statement that Sanders made from the podium and was expected to be taken at face value. So there's not a lot of credibility to go around here, and that's one of the issues that the White House needs to be aware of. You know, if you are consistently lying to the American people, at some point you may have an issue that you may need to push back against. It could be something small like Omarosa. It could be something big like national security. But at this point, It's an issue for the White House if you don't know who to trust.
Come on, if the White House thrives on chaos, why wouldn't one thing happen with an explanation one day, and a different explanation come out in the next day? To didn't Metro just do that? Where are we going? I mean, that's the way government works. I've never been a bureaucrat like that, so I don't. Mm-hmm. But I grew up in the city. That's the way bureaucracies work. One person says something, and it is to distract. The thing is not, the question is not who's the messenger. The question is, what is the message?
But well, it's also getting to the point now where this is every member of the administration who leaves. We had the same issue with Rob Porter initially saying that the White House stands behind
him
fully.
And I'm with you on that.
Yeah. Rob Porter, the you know, gentleman who was accused of beating his girlfriend and then was dismissed from the administration. The White House was all over the place on that issue, saying initially that he resigned on his own will,
and
saying
he was fired,
saying that they jumped in immediately, and then saying that, no, they wanted to let it go on for a little bit longer. So it's not just bureaucracy. It's not just, you know, typical government, you know, kind of fudging the facts.
Yeah, it is. Pick a presidency. Sure. Pick a White House.
Well, let's not.
Right.
But I will say that, you know, Omarosa's book comes out this week. This is August. And then, of course, Bob Woodward's book comes out next month.
Oh, another one?
Absolutely. I mean, if it's August or the September book is coming out. But
Omarosa got into a tete-a-tete with on Channel 4 this morning, NBC. NBC mm-hmm. News when
Savannah Guthrie.
Savannah was firing off those questions.
Yeah, and the condescending was just ridiculous.
And Omarosa couldn't keep up.
Yeah. We do need to keep up with the very latest on the health and welfare of Aretha Franklin. Her family,
yes.
Confirming that she is gravely ill. The, you know, the queen of soul, the original songstress, Detroit's own. And I guess I always knew that she was not in the best of health, but I'm going to be quite honest. I was really, really shocked at where we are just right now with this.
Yeah, because she had canceled a few concerts over the past 5 or 6 years. Concert canceled here, concerts canceled there. Even an appearance, because, and you know she doesn't fly. Aretha was definitely afraid since the mid-80s. Mm. She's been afraid of flying, so she does that bus thing, and I understand the Patty does the bus thing well, too. La Belle, for those of you who might not know which Patty. Not you, I know you. I saw you not.
How dare you.
But here's the thing. Aretha covered every genre of music. Even some that don't even have names yet.
Yep.
Starting out in Daddy Franklin's church, listening and singing with Sam Cooke and the Soul Stirrers, making a name for herself, growing up in a town that where Motown was created. And she, like I said, she covered every genre. She did, I think, everything except Broadway.
Yeah. And so many people, as Jeff Brown said earlier in our story, so many women, and I would argue even some men, singer entertainers have followed her.
Yeah, don't tell Luther he ain't here no more.
Exactly.
Don't tell Luther he didn't too.
Exactly. Imitated, certainly never duplicated Justin.
No, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And, you know, going to what you said about how she covered all genres, one of my favorite albums that I have, I'm a big vinyl guy.
Me too.
Oh,
how
old are
you?
Right?
Vinyl?
Whoa.
Yeah. No, but her Live in Paris 1968 is one of my favorite records of all time.
Mm.
You know, she can take a song and make it her own,
right,
if it's a cover. You know, Respect is the obvious one, where it's the quintessential example of a cover that's better than the original. But also on that one, she takes, you know, Satisfaction by the Rolling Stones, mm-hmm, and just blows it out of the water. Makes it so good, just a sheer
it
testament.
Away, doesn't
exactly,
she?
Right?
Yeah.
Yep, yep.
Yeah,
just a sheer testament
yeah.
to her talent.
I mean, Narada, Michael Walden. Look, there's nobody who,
from American Bandstand to Soul Train,
right,
to movies,
to Barack
soundtracks.
And Michelle Obama
absolutely.
At the inauguration.
Yeah.
So we are certainly sending our prayers, well wishes, and hopefully we will, I don't know, let us hope that gravely ill,
the grace of God.
Yeah, there's got to be some recovery. I mean, just the thought. I'm speechless at the prospect. So certainly, you know, we certainly.
Did you ever see her live?
I never did.
Me either.
I never did. And actually had a chance to see her at the Kennedy Center and was not able to go at the last minute. I certainly regret that. Justin Duckham and Deborah Simmons, thank you both so much for chatting with us. And I'm sure we'll be talking
to you
both again. That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM channel 141 for this Monday, August 13th. I'm Harold Fisher. You can tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Now stay tuned for The Connection. Good night.